Blog Talk Radio.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Yes. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slang. Now we locked up again. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states, working your forms. Black nannies carrying your white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? You never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I wanna get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up. Get up, get up. Get up, get up.
Worst case scenario, might work till a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the rodent's still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, racing dough. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland security now, there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres. Take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early. Is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
And lost your mind, especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got pawn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign, SWAT team, crack fiends, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. Since phone calls cost a dime, what it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent brothers not only dealing with the same drugs. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same thug heritage.
Why you wanna treat me so cold?
Another exciting program with the Dr. Mary Lee live from coast to coast. I'm Dr. Tatum from California, and the music you just heard was by Dr. Cornell West. It was written, and the music was given out to America back in 2007 on Hidden Beach Records. The first rapper was I Rizz the Moment, my youngest son, followed by Rod Digga, Black Thought, and, of course, Dr. Cornell West. The music was also produced by my oldest son, Corey Cochi Tatum. We have an exciting show tonight. Our topic, we're going to be dealing with Get the Lead Out, the truth about lead. And we're going to be asking questions about what can be done to ensure water is safe and used in our community. So I'm going to be turning you over to Dr. Mary Lee, and hopefully later we'll be hearing from Dr. Cannon, James Cannon. He is a father of entertainer Nick Cannon, and he's part of the H.R. 1242, which is a bill that was signed in Congress January 2018. Nick Cannon is the ambassador. So at this time, without further ado, introduce you to our host of the show and producer, Dr. Mary Lee.
Thank you, Dr. Tatum. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm really excited about our topic tonight because it affects so many people, and particularly our children, who are very sensitive and to you know, this lead poisoning. There's so much about blacks and lead poisoning nationwide, but we all know that we've had this Flint, Michigan crisis. Now it's in Michigan, and now it's appearing in the Benton Harbor city. My understanding is that what's going on in this small black town of Benton Harbor is even more so effective than the one in Flint. And so we're excited to be here. I would like to ask our panel, our guest tonight, to press one on your phone so that your line can be opened. I want you to do that, please. Tap one on your phone so that we can be certain to have your line open if you're listed as a guest tonight, okay? And we will be introducing you all soon. Please also mute your telephones when you're not speaking. I think we've got so many of you opened up, you know, at this moment. Again, our topic tonight is Get the Lead Out, the truth about lead. And I'm hoping that I don't see all of our guests. We don't see all of you. We hope that you can call on in and so that we can open your lines up. Okay. We're going to get right to it tonight. Dr. Don Tynes, are you here? Are you here? Dr. Curtis Oliver Longs, are you on?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so very much. We're going to come back around and going to ask you all to introduce yourselves and tell us a bit about you, about your background. Dr. Anita Moncrief.
Yes, I'm on.
Okay. Okay, great. Dr. Walter Davis. Dr. Walter Davis. Reverend Edward Pickney.
I'm here.
Okay, great. Then we also have Robert Harding. Are you here?
Yeah.
Robert Harding. Okay, welcome you all. I do thank you for joining us tonight. Okay, we're talking about something very, very serious, and this is the drinking water, our water that we need to live by. Now, one thing I saw somewhere where there have been on the city of Benton Harbor, there have been some EPA letters, you know, of compliances. And earlier, I really thought that the national, the EPA at federal level came with the city of Benton Harbor to ensure, you know, that they receive, you know, what they need for correcting this issue and bringing them into compliance. But what I read not too long ago, well, I think that was last night, is where that there are certain things that have to happen within, like, to me, a very short period of time, and that the burden is being put on the city of Benton Harbor to do these compliances, or they could possibly end up with some hefty fines, as much as $59,000 a day. And so I think that we're going to start out with Reverend Pickney. If you could tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, who you are and your position and what you do there in the city of Benton Harbor, and actually what the situation really is. Reverend Pickney.
Absolutely, absolutely. My name is Reverend Edward Pickney. I'm the president and CEO of the Benton Harbor Community Water Council. We are the one who filed the petition to the EPA to get the action started in the city of Benton Harbor. The problem actually, you know, we're talking about this last report by the EPA on Benton Harbor, but they had one in 2018 that was even more devastating, and nothing was done. And like you said, they putting it back on the city. They should. The city is responsible for this because they failed to do anything. They failed to tell the people that there was a lead problem in the city of Benton Harbor. It's not just the lead. See, this is where the EPA comes in. It's not just the lead that this problem is. It's the facility itself where they fail to do some of the most important things that should be done. But let me tell you how all this started. It started with a woman named Emma Kennard. She took two jars of how long do you want me to talk?
No, you can talk as long as you need, sir. There's no limit here.
Okay.
We've got time.
All right, because this was a story I think that need to get out. Emma Kennard took two quarts of water to the mayor of Benton Harbor. And, it wasn't just her water that had the problem. It was a square block of people who had problems with their water because there was what they called a lead channel in the line. And when she took it there, he did nothing with it, nothing. So what we did, we went out and had some water tested for him and came back with over 300 parts per billion of lead in the water. And that's how we zoomed into action because we knew that there was a problem. 300 parts per billion of lead, it will mess you up. And they didn't want to acknowledge it. The city tried to keep it a secret instead of letting the residents know, because they didn't quite understand. They, with any time that you're dealing with lead is poison. And you need to tell the community that the lead is there. So for 3 years, we were deputized to go out and help Mike O'Malley test the water. And the first year came back on an average, after 60 samples, 22 parts per billion, which is 15 is the action level. The next year came back 24. And then this final year here in 21, it actually came back 33 parts per billion. But they had us to go out and get some more samples to lower it down to 24, you see. So actually they were playing tricks on the residents of Benton Harbor even then. But the problem is people didn't understand how serious lead is. Lead will kill you. It's a slow death. But people never that a black city like Benton Harbor would have anyone who would have the wisdom to know to file a petition with the EPA to get some action. So that's how all this started. All this started with the petition that we filed with the EPA, in which they know behind this is coming a class action lawsuit. So Mm-hmm. That's where we at right now. What we're trying to do right now is educate the people of the seriousness of lead and also to make the city of Benton Harbor whole. I'll leave it right there.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you so much. So what you're saying is that you all took this information, took the water and to the city, and the city just sat on it and
right.
did absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
Wow.
Because that's their history. They don't do nothing when black people do things. Only if Emma Kanaan was being white, they'd have been jumping all over it. But the
mm-hmm.
problem is she's black. And black folks don't really react to black people, especially black people in power. So that's what really was the power. That's why we bypassed the state and went straight to the federal government.
Oh, I see. So you actually bypassed the state.
Right. We had told the state knew about it already, because anytime you do testing, that it goes through Lanson. And then what Lanson do, they send the report back to the city of Benton Harbor, and the city of Benton Harbor job is to let the public know that we have a crisis here, and they failed to do so.
Okay, so thank you so much, Fred. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
By going through the federal government, they put the pressure on the state and the city, and that's where we at today.
So this is where you are right now, and what in the community, within the community, you know, what has come about? I mean, do you have residents coming forth, and questioning the city or questioning your department? What has been the reaction of the community at large? And also, I'd like to know what's been the reaction of the actual council members.
Well, let me start with the community first. What has happened inside the community is that, one of the things about a black community, they don't quite understand the seriousness of lead, because white people is not telling them what the governor is saying. Do not drink the water because of abundance of caution. What kind of language is that to tell people when she can simply say the water is unsafe to drink, it's unsafe to brush your teeth, it's unsafe to cook with, it's unsafe to bathe in, it's unsafe to make baby formula. There's nothing, to me, her job is to tell the people the truth. It's unsafe. And how hard is that? And then we talk about the elected officials. Not one of them know what to do or knew what to do. One of the commissioners, Ron Singleton, he filed a state of emergency. And the only reason the mayor and the pro tem voted for it, they thought that the mayor was going to have absolute power. And that's why he voted after the attorney told him that he's not getting paid. He thought he was going to get paid. And found out he didn't get paid, he felt like he'd been suckered, because he can't read. It's simple, right in the charter, that when you call for a state of emergency, it's simply a resolution. That's all it is. But that puts that makes the state liable now for resources that should be coming to Benton Harbor. So I'll leave it right there.
Okay. So I see Dr. Don Tynes has joined us also from the city of Benton Harbor. We would like for you to introduce yourself, and I don't know how much of this you were able to hear from Reverend Pinckney, but we'd like to hear your response. Dr. Don Tynes.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, you're right. I was busier working. The thing that I'll do is to track behind is do the historical perspective. As a internal medicine and pediatric physician who run the Benton Harbor Health Center, which is the only medical center in the city of Benton Harbor, who treats from newborn all the way to the cemetery, and who's on the front line when it comes to lead, when it comes to COVID, when it comes to H1N1, when it comes to any of the issues there, and who actually walked in 2003 side by side with Reverend Pinckney during the uprising that they called the riot. So he's been consistently doing this since 2003. So this is nothing new. We have some new people who just joined the movement towards the land, but there was only Reverend Pinckney. Every other pastor who said they were out there is a liar and worked for Satan. There was nobody else on this issue but Reverend Pinckney. And any other pastor that you may see on the media taking pictures, those are only satanic representatives. The history of this started in 2015 when the group now called EGLE, now back then was called Department of Environmental Quality, came to the city of Benton Harbor and inspected their water and found a problem. During that time, the city was under emergency management because it was a black city run by black people who really are from an agricultural base, so then they were kind of limited in their cognitive capacity. And if you think about it, that the time frame that this city was in at that time was 1954. Currently, in terms of the current mindset that Reverend Pinckney's kind of applying to, we're really at 1958. So the mindset and behaviors chronologically fit 1958, that we're starting to become black aware. We're starting to think that we're somebody. But 99.9% of all your educated professionals, all of your politicians are basically black-skinned white people in terms of their thinking, their behavior, and their actions. And the reason I have to preface that is because of what comes next. So 2017, they come out of emergency management, and the city manager is appointed not by the city officials or the commission or process, but by the review board that was overseeing the emergency management. Then they're told that the mayor and the city manager that they have a lead program, a lead problem, and that some actions need to be taken. That's 2017.
Mm-hmm.
But no communication was delivered to the city commissioners or the city or the residents in 2017. 2018, they come back and they meet with the city manager and the mayor to say that, hey, you have a lead problem. You need to do to notify the people that there's a problem so they can take precautions. Nothing happened. The group monitored and saw that the mayor and the city manager did nothing and sent a certified letter going over that they met with them in 2017 and 18. So remember, 2017 is when the mayor of the city of Benton Harbor became aware. 2017 is when the city manager of Benton Harbor became aware. And so in 2018,
and
they were served.
The city manager was the emergency appointed manager?
Told you.
Okay.
I told you in 2017 they came out of emergency management, so it was the city manager, the city manager. So it was no longer under emergency management. Tony Harris had left, and a gentleman named Mr. Watson was put in his place. So he was the city manager and with the current mayor. And so in 2018, they were threatened, and then action was going to be taken against them, and that's when they made the commission aware, and then they downplayed the severity of it. So that's why in 2018, you had no action. But also in 2018, in November, there's a news article showing Reverend Pinckney crying out that the lead in Benton Harbor was worse than that in Flint and that people need not to drink the water. And that's when he started implementing a water campaign where he was giving out water back in 2018 when nobody was listening. 2019 came and nobody was listening, and they had a new city manager, And that city manager downplayed the water issue, downplayed the water plant issue, and said that the water was fine. But you only had Reverend Pinckney with the Benton Harbor Water Council, Community Water Council, saying that there was a problem. And so now we go into 2020. The only voice in the wilderness is the Benton Harbor Community Water Council, Reverend Pinckney, and now he's been reaching out to the DEQ, to the state, these other agencies, Freshwater, Clearwater, all these agencies, and then now some momentum in 2020 is coming, and he now has the EPA involved and the Benton Harbor Public Health Department also gave testimony along with Reverend Pinckney. He gave an excellent lecture to that effect, and now the EPA was there, and then it was revealed to the EPA that the black city commissioners, that the black city manager, that the black mayor had agreed to a 20-year poisoning plan. In other words, they had agreed to fix the lead problem over a 20-year period. They also agreed to raise the water rates on the residents at the request of the engineering company, and they came back later and raised it again. And so now the water rates were raised supposedly to pay to get the piping done over 20 years. And in that meeting with the EPA, it was stated there was no acceptable lead level. And so number two, and that 20 years of poisoning or 20 years being exposure to lead was totally medically, environmentally unacceptable and even governmentally unacceptable. And therefore, there was pressure now on the city to try to get the work done within 4 to 5 years. There was no commitment still at this time by the city manager, by the mayor, by the commission. Now, two commissioners did sit on that committee, and then they realized their error, that they were wrong. So I said that because, remember, cognitively, remember, we're in 1958. So in 1958, there is a lot of fear of Europeans or whites of that time. And that is the mindset in Benton Harbor now of all the elected officials. And if you see, that's really the elected officials throughout the United States, because the work of Claude Anderson showed that when we only had 103 blacks and politicians throughout the whole United States, we accomplished more. Now that we have over 9,000, we have actually went backwards because they only look out for themselves, and now the big thing that they only look out for weed or marijuana. So that's the driving force now, is to look out for self, to see how much friends you can become with European or whites. That is the mindset. So we're back politically. We haven't really moved moved the needle since really 1958. Going to 68, we went backwards, backward in time. Other places are a little bit more advanced, but this is where we are. And so when coming out, we wind up doing Negro behaviors, and that's why every mistake that Flint made, we currently did again in Benton Harbor. So again, that in 2021, the alert was sounded, but it wasn't until the Benton Harbor Community Water Council, led by Reverend Pinckney, until they got with the EPA and filed that petition, that brought the attention, and then that brought niggas pretending that they care and were concerned. And up until that time, there was no care or concern, and they pissed on the senior citizens, because the senior citizens who are still trying to make these high water bills, and even though they can't use the water, there has been no relief from none of the city commissioners to say pay. Only one city commissioner said pay off everybody's water bill, and that was the commissioner, Dwayne Seeks. And no one supported him on that effort. Everybody else is letting the senior citizens be in charge. And they lied at first and said that nobody was being given shutoff notices. And then we had proof that they were given shutoff notices. And then the next thing was, well, we passed a moratorium that no one's going to get their water turned off. You see, but that is the mindset of your politicians. So that that's the immature level that we are, because we're still in 1958. Instead of being proactive, pro-black, pro-community, then if you lift up the bottom of the black, everybody else above always benefits, whether they're Hispanic, whether they're Native American, whether they're Arab or whatever. So our leaders do not do that. There is not a single leader in the city of Benton Harbor that looks out for black people. You had one person who was elderly, but she did not have the force to go out and protect black people. Black people in Benton Harbor are not protected. Black people who are black and poor, white and poor, Hispanic and poor, are not protected. The only thing that's protected is individuals who smoke weed. That is, if you're a marijuana user, then that's where all the might and force is going to come to try to help and protect you. But not against lead, not against poor education, not against special ed. No, that is the mindset that we're here and that Reverend Pinckney is fighting.
Okay, so I'd like to kind of go back to 2017 when the emergency management, you know, they were no longer involved. But the city manager and the mayor were both aware of the lead problem. Now, did I understand you correctly to say that none of the commissioners were the commissioners were not informed, or the city council was not informed?
Correct. They did not become informed until like November or December of 2018. And that's when there was an article in one of the community newspapers that where Reverend Pinckney was cited pointing out the lead. That's when they had a little press meeting that played down it. That's, you know, on the historical record. That's when the city commission became aware around November, December 2018.
Okay, wow. So the Benton Harbor Community Water Council that you, Reverend Pinckney, is the head of, is this a government entity or community entity? You know, and who all is involved in that council?
It's a community entity, and Dr. Times is part of that. So basically, what we like to do. We would like to make the community aware that there is a problem, and it's been a challenge, but that's our main objective, is to make sure that we tell the people that we have a problem and we need to do something about it, because it's not just for, you know, for growing, it's for the future of our children. This is where we're failing. We're dropping the ball, and we don't even know how many people have gotten sick behind this.
That was going to be my next question. Has there been any type of testing or any kind of medical, you know, organizing to test, you know, the children and the homes? What's going on there?
Dr. Chan can answer that one.
Yeah, so what has happened, it's been an uphill battle. So here's the medical mindset in Berrien County. Once the issue hit the surface that there was a water problem, the state, not fully working with the Benton Harbor Community Water Council, sent water filters to Berrien County Health Department. They partnered with the Benton Harbor Community Water Council to distribute these filters. But there was two different approaches. The approach from the county was read off the box, do you understand this? And a lot of people, and remember, 1958, did not really comprehend the instructions in that way with the filter. So the Benton Harbor Community Water Council said, hey, if they verbally couldn't understand it, they will go to the homes and install it for them. So they will explain it to them. If they got it through the explanation that they did, good. If not, then they would come to the home and did it. And so what wound up happening, a massive effort was done, and a lot of filters were installed. The state, Eagle, DEQ, recognized that this was done not by the city of Benton Harbor, and it was not really done by the health department, but it was really done by a community action group, and they praised that group. And because they received the praise, the 1958 European-American mentality was shut down, giving out the filters to the city residents of Benton Harbor. Even though that the lead problem was there, the crisis problem was there, the pipes hadn't been removed, they just shut it down. Now they want to come up with an excuse where I wish Dr. Davis was on the line, where they're saying these filters were not as good, so that's why we stopped them. But that's a lie, because those filters were at the standard where they were supposed to remove the lead. And so that was the excuse of why, instead of the racial excuse, instead of the economic and environmental injustice excuse, that was the excuse of why they shut that down. And then from there now, that they don't want to work with the Benton Harbor Health Center because the director of the Benton Harbor Health Center is black, because the Benton Harbor Health Center is pro-black, unashamedly
When you say
pro-black.
They, who are you referring to? Are you referring to
talking about,
the...
I'm talking about the Barron County Health Department. I'm talking about the state.
Okay.
Talking about the Eagle. I'm saying because the idea of even delivering water could have came to the health department, but the blessing was it went to God's Household of Faith. It went to the church of Reverend Pitney where the water went. The filters went there. We actually were trying to even get them to give the lead testing kits to Reverend Pitney because I'm the city's health center and health department de facto, but I'm African-centered. So that means that I'm pro-black, pro-African, and unapologetically pro-black. And that causes a problem because I guess that, for me, I work with everybody because I'm working with white, blacks, Asians, but those individuals from the 1954 European mindset are not comfortable with working with me. So instead of supplying me, they're supplying a reverend. And it was only Reverend Pitney who gave us some cases of water for the health center. Well, all the other businesses were given water supply. My water had to come from Illinois, from churches, Seventh-day Adventist churches in Illinois, office and this patient and the patients. So, yes, I've been testing outside of what the county health department has been doing. I'm doing the babies. I'm doing the children. I'm doing senior citizens. Plus, I've also partnership with Harvard and Purdue where we're going to be testing for lead in the bones. So I've even talked with the CDC, working directly with them. So I'm making sure that our people here are educated and protected, that they're educated and protected and going outside the source of what outside playing the politics, because my effort is if I take care of everybody black, that everybody white, everybody Hispanic, everybody Asian is going to be taken care of. Because if I go down deep in the soil and raise everybody up, all of those groups that's sitting on top of African Americans are going to benefit from it. So, yes, I'm doing the testing. Yes, I found people with lead in their blood. So that's what we're working on right now to identify those. Now, lead lasts in the bloodstream anywhere from 25 to 30 days. It could be a recycling of the lead in the blood every 120 days if the person is low on iron, and then that lead will just be picked right up by the new blood cells, and you kind of recycle that. But otherwise, it should be in the bone and tissues causing damage.
Okay, so of the numbers of residents that you've tested, what percentage would you say is coming back with lead poisoning?
That's a piece of documentation that I'm supposed to be receiving today from Quest Labs. The shocking part is that I found adults and all the way up to age 68. So I found them from the 30s. All the way to the 70s, I found lead. So I have to get more data, and we have to sort that out to see where did the lead come from.
Where is
it coming from? That's
important. Okay.
This is the early stages of finding the lead and then going out to do treatment for it.
So all of the city council commissioners and your county commissioners there, you've only had one commissioner to care or be concerned or who understand that the one that you said came forth and asked that the bills be paid off, but no
right.
other commissioners?
So what you have, you got two things. You have a young lady named Ruthie Harlison who now is got kind of weeded out. But she was the one who's strong support of Reverend Pinckney. She's the one that came out kind of publicly. That Ruthie. The other person was Dwayne Seeks, Mayor Pro Tem Seeks, who was fighting with his own committee that the state gave money to pay the water bills off. They're still holding on to the money today as we speak. So they did not go out to really help the residents. So you had that one person, a lone voice. You had the second, who's a senior citizen, asking for them to pay the bills, asking them to support Reverend Pinckney and to allow him to have access, to the water department, these type of things like he had previously. So, but you have only those two voices. The other one person is saying, this is shame how they doing this. This is shame. And the other people are quiet about it. So that's what you have. So you have one person who says it's a shame quietly, and she's a female. Another one who posts out that, it's a shame. You have one person who's a senior who vocally says it. Then you have one gentleman who just said that pay all the water bills down to zero. That's what you literally have coming out of City Hall. And then you have the city manager, who's directly responsible for the water department, was trying to play a game with the words, saying that there was no problem and that the water was fine at the water plant. And now it's been exposed that the plant has a whole lot of deficiencies. So the city manager was not truthful. So you have that type of problem. Everything like Flint being repeated.
Okay. We have also on the line with us a scientist, a biogeoscientist, Robert Harding, and he'll be sharing and talking with us tonight. I'd like you to, Mr. Harding, introduce yourself and share your background and provide us with your thoughts on the conversation so far tonight. Mr. Harding. Okay.
You have to press 1 to unmute.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr. Harding. Okay, well, we'll come back to Mr. Harding.
I'm here. Sorry, I was muted.
Oh, you're there. Okay, great. Okay. We can't hear you, sir.
Yes, if you use the question, please, I was muted, and then I'll come unmute.
Okay, so you're unmuted, yes. So what we'd like to ask you, based on the conversations so far, I'd like you to introduce yourself and your comments on the discussion up to now, regarding this lead poisoning and any facet of this conversation.
Okay, so first of all, I'm educated at the University of California. I'm a biogeochemist by training, and I do a lot of research with different kinds of organisms. There's different kinds of pollutants and metals and whatnot. One of my special areas of expertise is bioremediation, which is like the cleanup of a lot of these types of substances and whatnot. A lot of it we just cleaned up with by having organisms consume them and incorporate the metals and poisons into their own biomass, which is unfortunately not on the table with lead. It's poisonous to most organisms that would be able to possibly absorb it in that fashion. Certainly, it's not certainly to any kind of mammal whatsoever. It's not something that you can recognize. There's no taste and no smell in lead, so you could be consuming it or be exposed to it and not have a clue about it, which is often the case when it comes to human beings. And there's a lot of different pathologies associated with lead, and a lot of kidney abnormalities. It affects the psychological capabilities of persons who's been exposed to it over a long period of time, especially. And it can be innocuous. It can be something that you just don't know about. You just suddenly you're having problems with your child, behavioral problems, academic problems, these types of things. So it's very devastating to a person who's exposed to it, especially for a long period of time. It's just a crying shame that people knew about this and didn't tell the general public that they've been exposed to this poisonous substance. And it's not the first time it's happened. I've been in many of these cases popping up across the country where this type of exposure is known about, but just covered up because it's expensive to clean up. It's very politically hot potato, you might say. So it's a recurring theme in African-American communities especially. And we have to step up and start investigating these situations ourselves and make sure that we're not at risk for these types of exposure for ourselves and our children. Children are particularly devastated by this problem because they're still developing, and they're not developing correctly when they're exposed to lead, especially in high concentrations like this. So it's can ruin a person's entire life to a certain extent because they're not knowing what they're developing, they're not knowing developing capabilities to process knowledge and information like a normal person would. And it's not something that's obvious. So we have to be vigilant ourselves in terms of doing our own testing and screening of our water supply because, like I said, it's a recurring problem in our communities, and we have to address it and take care of ourselves.
So it's a huge problem nationwide, and are there any organizations, or is it anything out there, I mean, for Black people to be educated? I mean, they're just so it's possible that, you know, all Blacks have been exposed, being that they're just not letting us know. You say that we as a people are going to need to, you know, be proactive ourselves. Well, how can we be proactive when we don't know? But we don't even know where to begin. That it even exists.
You know, the testing of the water is a key component of the whole awareness issue. I think because of the history around this poisonous substance and its relationship to our communities, that we have to, you know, we should investigate if water, if your water tastes chalky, and you see the coloration is not correct. These types of things are red flags. There's something maybe going on with the water. You see, lead is a mineral, and oftentimes it's associated with other minerals in the water. If you have lead in your water, you probably have other minerals in your water as well that helps contribute to that taste. So my number one line of defense is just checking out your water, making sure it's not funny smelling, funny looking, and keep an eye on your children especially because, you know, their behavior, their development, if you see something that looks that's not quite right, you may want to have them checked out, too, by their physician, the pediatrician.
Oh, okay. So you can really kind of keep an eye and watch your children's behavior. And I would venture to even say that these school psychologists and counselors probably, I mean, should be kind of trained in this and might possibly know themselves. Or should be able to raise the issue?
I don't know of any programs that highlight lead as a potential pathogen that should be, I guess, looked out for, watched out for.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I've run across situations where it does appear in a community's water supply, everyone seems mutually taken off guard by this. Like I said, it's nothing that you notice offhand without kind of look and dig for the presence of it in your drinking water. But it's such a devastating compound or mineral that it bears just a due diligence on our part just in terms of making sure, you know, we're at risk for whatever might be in the water. We don't control the water companies. We don't control the environmental testing agencies, and we're not, you know, keeping a vigilant eye out for this thing. We have to start forming these institutions, organizations that can help assist us in you know, keeping an eye out, watching out for our our environmental, the health of our environment and its impact on our personal human health. Because it's not just lead, it's other carcinogens and poisons that may be in the land. Houston, Texas, we had a couple incidents where there's been pollution of such toxic chemicals that was in the ground from previous activity of industry that's been known about by public officials that hasn't been acted upon. So it doesn't stop with lead. It doesn't start with lead. It's about convenience of disposal of these things in our communities where they feel like they're locked to get away with it because no one's looking for it.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you. Dr. Moncrief, if you could tell us who you are and your position regarding this situation, plus your area of expertise that you can speak on. Dr. Moncrief?
Yes, hello. And thank you for having me on the program this evening. I'm an internist and a pediatrician of training. I'm also retired from practicing. As a pediatrician, we were trained to test children for lead. And we were trained to test children in my day, and unfortunately, it's still true today. We would test children for the first time for lead when they were around the age of two. And that's because at the age of two, the children were able to walk around and get into different things that lead was in. For example, lead paint was the thing when I was growing up. And if you had a house that was built before 1970, chances are the paint that was used in that house had lead in it. And what had happened over time, we've moved away from having lead in paint, and we do what we call lead abatement, where we try to have the lead removed from the houses, from the that's in paint, or what has happened over time, we covered up the lead paint with non-lead paint, okay? But I can remember as a child looking out my window. My childhood home was built in 1929, and so as a child, I can remember looking out my window and around the year 1960 and seeing the paint flaking and thinking, I don't know if I did this, about actually eating or tasting the paint. So for most of us, our thoughts about getting lead came from the paint exposure. Then came the lead in our gasoline. I don't know if you guys remember going through a period where we went from leaded gas to unleaded gas because lead was being released into the environment that way.
Hmm.
Now we're into a period where we have lead being released from our pipes, from our infrastructure. Our infrastructure has gotten old and is deteriorating, and those pipes have lead in it, and that lead is being released into the water. And because the lead is being released into the water, remember I told you we test children starting at two because they can walk around, but children younger than the age of two drink the water. So now we have a whole together different place where we should be testing children, okay? And we should be testing children, as far as I'm concerned, when they start drinking the water, as early as 6 months, you know, you should be testing the children to see whether or not they picked up lead, because the infrastructure, not only for cities like Benton Harbor, but for all cities, has gotten older. What we're seeing, though, in cities like Benton Harbor, cities like Flint, cities like Detroit, cities that have large African-American populations, and I want Dr. Tynes to go back and talk about compare the city of Benton Harbor to the city of St. Joseph, which are just a few miles apart, but their populations are almost flipped in terms of one is predominantly African American and the other one is predominantly European American, and the resources and the response that led, the different response that led to these two different cities are having. But anyway, now the problem is the infrastructure is old and lead, which is to think about, again, when we were growing up, one of the characters that was on TV was Superman, and Superman had this X-ray vision that could see through anything except lead. Lead is like a heavy metal, okay? It was Superman couldn't see through it, and yet our children are being allowed, and we are being allowed to drink it, okay? And if Superman's eyes can't see through it and burn it up, why would you expect, once it's in our bodies, that our bodies can destroy lead? It just doesn't happen. Once lead gets into our bodies, it's a lot of work to get that lead out of our bodies, okay? So the key is not to get the lead in the body. And so when you identify large levels of lead being released into the water supply and that water supply being consumed by people, you don't take 20 years to fix the problem. You try to fix the problem almost immediately. And in an area, in a city as large as Benton Harbor, whose area is about 5 miles, I guess, Reverend Pinckney and Dr. Tynes can speak more on that. It should not take 20 years, and these gentlemen have been on the front line fighting, and I think have been successful in their battles. It shouldn't take 20 years. It should take 1 year, okay? But to be politically correct, I think the city of Benton Harbor has now been granted the approval to have that infrastructure fixed within 2 years. There's a big difference between 2 years and 20 years. There's a big difference between the number of children who will be exposed between 2 years and 20 years. There's a big difference also in waiting till children are 2 years of age to start testing versus, like I said, early testing. And that's what we should be looking for. And then once we test, we must have something available to people who have positive test results. Any lead level, to me, any amount of lead in your body shouldn't be there. We have what we call acceptable levels of lead in the body, but there's no level of lead that should be there. And I can talk to more about that, if time permits. But I just wanted to get out there saying that the infrastructure, those pipes, need to be replaced immediately. Filters are okay, but they don't solve the problem. Replacing those pipes will. And that is important that that we test people with a plan of what we're going to do and hold our elected officials accountable for getting the lead out in an acceptable time period. Because if the lead isn't out in 2 years, who's responsible for that? If the lead isn't out in 5 years, who's responsible? They'll drag it out for 20 years if we don't hold somebody accountable. And somebody being accountable means there should be charges. People should go to jail if this problem is not resolved. Thank you.
So legal charge. You're welcome, and thank you so very much. So, legal charges really should be brought against whom?
For example, there are only certain companies who have been authorized to replace the lead pipes. Okay? Companies that have been authorized to replace the lead pipes should have a contract that says they will replace these pipes in 2 years or less than 5 years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If they don't do that, if they take your money and they don't do that, there should be more than just saying, I'm sorry. The leadership, the CEOs, the presidents of those companies who take the money, who say they're going to do this and don't do it, charges should be brought against them, not just fines levied, because they get millions of dollars to do this work. So if you pay me, for example, $20 million, and then you fine me $1 million, I'm good for $19 million, so that's okay. But if you if you fine me plus you send me to jail, you hold me accountable, then I'm not going to take your money if I can't do it. And let me give you an example. If you have, if you only have three companies who can do this work in the area of southwestern Michigan, you only have, if you only have three companies can do this work, these companies are going around signing people up and saying that we can get this done in 20 years, okay? Because you have to go with these three companies, right? But these three companies, they know they can do the work in less than 5 years, but they'll give you a 20-year contract so that, they, so that there's no rush and so that they can sign up more municipalities, okay?
Right, and so we don't want that to happen.
We don't want that to happen. Our elected officials, our elected officials who go into those agreements like that 20 years, you know, maybe they don't know any better at first, but if they do their due diligence, they'll know that this, these jobs can be done in less than 20 years and more like less than 5 years, more like two years, okay?
Right.
Those officials, even if they're no longer in office, okay, if they approve that 20-year thing, they should be held accountable, and they should be sued. They should be sued. You've got to hold people accountable for their actions. If you just let them walk away, then you'll keep seeing what's happening today. You make these deals, and nothing is done. We'll be talking about lead in Benton Harbor's water 20, 25 years from now if nobody is held accountable.
Right. So thank you so much. I want to we'll be coming back to you. And we'll be going back to Dr. Tynes and Dr. Reverend Pinckney in just a bit. But I'd like for we have Dr. Longs on, and we'd like for you to introduce yourself, Doctor, and your background and where you stand at here and this this deadly situation in Benton Harbor.
Okay. Again, thanks, Dr. Mary Lee Live, for having me on the show tonight. My name is Dr. Curtis Longs. I'm a physician. I practice in the area of psychiatry and neurology. And my training, similar to Dr. Moncrief and Tynes, and as well as Walter Davis, Dr. Davis, through the Detroit Medical Center, the DMC. My perspective on lead, you know, sometimes we use the term toxicity or poisoning because it is a poison, it's a toxin. As Dr. Moncrief and Tynes were speaking, it had me thinking about my residency and even medical school, how being exposed to pediatrics at Children's Hospital, where even in pursuit of a psychiatry residency, Dr. Moncrief is right. You know, we would test lead levels during my training there, doing pediatrics. Now, here it is, 25-plus years later, while practicing in the Detroit metropolitan area, and even in the juvenile justice system, I'll be honest and say that it is rare that I'll see such levels tested, particularly in kids in the juvenile justice system. And as far as educating the community, which is the key, and Dr. Tynes and Reverend Pinckney alluded to the fact that a lot of our people don't understand a lot of things that we talk about, particularly lead. You know, they may see news reports about Flint, Benton Harbor, and, of course, Detroit should be included, too, because our lead piping, et cetera, is so decayed, so we all are exposed. But in general, what I usually see in practice is the aftermath of lead toxicity, which, of course, usually is attributed to behavioral issues, and some specific diagnoses, particularly attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. The thing I would say is that, yeah, there are a lot of cases attributed to lead toxicity, but then there are the classic cases. One thing I wanted to point out in terms of, you know, we'll talk about lead, and as though, you know, an individual listening to the show tonight can, you know, run some water in their kitchen or bathroom, and they may think they can see it in the water, which you can unless it's so gross with the different depictions in Flint and in Benton Harbor. But one thing I would like the listening audience to understand is that when we say it's a poison, it is a poison, and it can deposit in all parts of your body, but particularly in my field of medicine, we see the manifestations of lead poisoning in your brain. And there's one area in our brain in terms of what I see a lot and what I wind up treating a lot within the field of psychiatry is an area called the prefrontal cortex. And that's basically, you know, the frontal part of your brain. That's the area that controls your ability to make executive decisions. It controls, it relates to impulse control, aggression, memory, et cetera. And when we talk about lead toxicity, you know, these levels deposited in those areas of the brain, which will not allow you to be the best that you can be in terms of education, impulse control, socialization, et cetera. And unfortunately, on my end, by the time I see some individuals, you know, they've been adjudicated in the juvenile justice system, but even there, usually lead toxicity isn't one of our main measures because, you know, the system doesn't provide that unless, you know, things are such that it's just so obvious. Now, as the discussion was moving on, I couldn't help but think how ironic it is that, you know, as we're talking about lead toxicity and poisoning, it's similar to the discussion that can be had regarding the dangerous effects of marijuana on the brain also. If you track both situations, you know, both affect your frontal lobe and can alter judgment, et cetera. One other thing that usually is not discussed is lead toxicity besides the behavioral manifestations is that how lead toxicity is also associated with heart disease, osteoporosis, and a lot of other conditions in the in human beings that usually don't get the attention that it should. Dr. Moncrief and Dr. Science, particularly Dr. Davis, could talk more about some of the things we researched besides the actual level of lead toxicity, but its effects on calcium metabolism, you know, and a lot of us take a lot of supplements and things like that. But if you had high lead toxicity levels in your body, you know, you can take all the calcium you want, but it's not going to prevent all the dysregulation that lead causes within your system. Without getting into technical details, you know, as human beings, we all function, we're all chemically mediated, meaning there's chemicals in our bodies that control our ability to function, think, react, et cetera. And when we're talking about lead toxicity on a macro, on a microscopic level, lead interferes with a lot of the things that we take dietarily, such as calcium, et cetera. So in general, I guess my comments is that my role in the community, particularly in the juvenile justice system, is that I will see the manifestations of lead toxicity in the form of behavioral issues, aggression, academic issues, the lowering of IQ, and thus ongoing issues that lead to a lot of adjudication and criminality. That would be my opening statement at this point.
Oh, thank you. So thank you very much. Dr. Davis, You're open. Your line is open. If you'll just share with us who you are and your background and your position, your expertise.
Okay,
thank you for
can
joining
you hear me?
Us. Yes, yes, we
okay.
can.
Okay. Hi, Dr. Mary Lee. I appreciate you having me on today. You
absolutely.
Know, yes, it's a wonderful, wonderful that you're able to get out in the community and let people know the real deal about a lot of issues, especially things like lead poison prevention. Well, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, I'm Dr. Davis. I actually graduated from Wayne State University School of Medicine, and I actually was the I was in the lead poison prevention program for the city of Detroit Department of Health and Wellness Promotion in 2010 through 2012. And, you know, during that time when I was at the health department, it was like it became very blaring and barely evident that we have a serious issue in the city of Detroit and a lot of minority communities. Like Benton Harbor. One of my best friends is mm-hmm. Dr. Times, and we had been in direct communication when I was at the health department with Benton Harbor Health Department as well, and with Dr. Times. And then currently I'm actually a full-time professor at Wayne County Community College. I teach microbiology and anatomy, physiology, and biology in the sciences. But I think it's important for people to understand what we're really dealing with. As Dr. Moncrief and Dr. Longs had mentioned, is like there's an issue that has been long term that is still percolating and it's festering in our communities, and unfortunately, a lot of times people have a tendency to downplay it. Because they say, well, in the state, you know, we only have 2.9% of our children that are lead poisoned. But what they're failing to say, in the state it might only be 2.9% of the children, but of the children that are lead poisoned, over 70% of them are in minority communities. And so in the state it may be okay because it's kind of diluted out. Mm-hmm. But when you look at where the cases are, they're in the minority communities. And so, you know, a lot of people don't really realize how serious this is. As Dr. Longs was saying, this is it's a poison. It's a poison that's affecting our children. And when you look at children are most affected because it affects their nervous systems, and so it affects their development. And so it can even low levels. Extremely low levels can harm a child's mental mm-hmm. development. And so a lot of times they don't even identify that a child has a problem until they start school because they notice that they're developmentally mm-hmm. delayed. They have behavior issues. They have slower cognitive issues. And so they start tagging them and saying, oh, special ed or ADHD. And really mm-hmm. it's because they've been poisoned. And so they start off their educational careers at a deficit, and then everyone tags them, and they're behind everyone, and then all of a sudden you develop a community of children that are deficient all the way through, and some of them start to drop out. Some of them start to act out because they don't seem to quite catch on, and it's because of the lead poisoning. You know, when I do talks, I usually mention, I said the lead poisoning is the silent killer of dreams, because when a child has been lead poisoned, you typically do not see the effects. You just think they're just problematic children, you know. But when I was at the health department, we did a retrospective study by the Detroit Department of Health and Wellness Promotion. And so we took 21,000 Detroit public school students who were tested for lead when they were infants. So when they were babies, they were tested for lead. Well, it's a retrospective study where we looked at these 21,000 current students in Detroit public schools, And we said, well, let's see how many of them were actually had lead poisoned when they were children, when they were infants. Mm-hmm. It was found out of 21,000, only 23 of them had zero lead poisoning when they were tested, when they were infants. That means that over 23 of them out of 21,000, which means that when they were babies and they were just doing random testing and all that, they found that over 99% of students that were tested in this retrospective study were lead poisoned. And so then what we did is we matched the standardized MEEP scores with these students and found that there was a direct correlation with low MEEP scores, the standardized state exam. It was direct correlation with the elevated blood lead levels. The higher the blood lead levels when they were infants, the lower the MEEP scores when they were going through school. So, as I said, the state knows all these numbers. The state has all these numbers. But they say, well, okay, in the state of Michigan, only 2% of the children have a blood lead level over in whatever number they want to give. But they, what they don't tell us is that of those 2% or 3%, that the vast majority of them are in minority communities.
Right,
so
99%.
Yeah, and if this was a different group of children that had these type of numbers, man, we wouldn't tolerate it as a society. We wouldn't tolerate it as a community or as a city. If there was in Farmington Hills, if the numbers were like that, it wouldn't be tolerated. Mm-hmm. It would become something serious that the state would take seriously. And so that's how come it's good where we have venues like this where we can actually get the word out to the community to tell them, it's like, look, don't just use our kids as testing dummies to see how lead will affect children,
Wow.
And so, yeah. And so, I mean, because when you look at it with the CDC, currently the CDC says there's no acceptable level of lead in children, zero.
Mm-hmm.
But see, and the thing is, the CDC has identified that, but what have we done about that? Have we identified where the potential for lead poisoning could be? Have we identified that, it's coming from lead-lined water pipes? And unfortunately, mm-hmm. most of the water pipes in the United States, especially in those older cities and communities like Benton Harbor, like City of Detroit, have lead pipes that are leading up to the houses. And then mm-hmm. we have breakouts and things like with Flint, and then people start saying, oh, let's do something about it. Well, let's be proactive, not just responsive. We don't want our children to be, the household lead detectors, where it's like, oh, we only clean up where a child is exposed and irreversibly harmed. Let's be proactive and actually get it at the very beginning before it actually happens and protect our children as we would protect any other community. And so, like I said, it's like that's kind of like a intro, and I'm looking forward to if anyone has any questions or any specifics, mm-hmm. we can, as we go along in the talk, we can address them further. But thank you for letting me join in this conversation.
Oh, well, thank you for joining in. I want to remind our listening audience that you're a part of this conversation as well. Please tap one on your phone for any questions or comments. I find this here really, really, really kind of devastating. When you talk about 99% of 21,000, and with mm-hmm. only 23 being lead free, that's really unacceptable. So when we talk about accountability, now, with these numbers, with this research and these been these studies, this information is going to the state. Now, I mean, in my opinion, they're just as guilty, you know, as anyone, you know, as any local city. And when you speak about the city of Benton Harbor being at a cognitive level of 1958, they're not understanding or knowing anything. Basically, you know, they don't understand, you know, or even know what to do, you know, at that level. And it sounds, this whole thing with this lead poisoning and these studies, you know, before the people who absolutely know, and it sounds like an experiment amongst our people. Here, you know, in my opinion, is this, we know they don't care. We know they don't like us like that. But how are you going to do, what are all these studies about? And then leaving these black communities with the lead-filled infrastructures and the pipes and not going in. These people, the county people, they all know. Like the Barron County, that's majority white control. Every county and every state officials, they know what is going on. So who is more responsible for this? Are they just using us and our people as guinea pigs? And who wants to address that? Anyone can.
All right, this is Dr. Tynes. And I think I would like Reverend Pickney to chime in on this. We saw, Reverend Pickney saw that the justice system of Benton Harbor, Wayne County, brought about the rioter uprising in 2003, that the people finally got upset. And it was known in 2003 by Mr. Greg Roberts that Benton Harbor had the best people, that they tolerated more abuse than any other, you know, community. And if a community like Benton Harbor, that you could step on their neck, spit on them, and they won't do nothing, all of a sudden stands up, that could be an alarming trend, you know, through other cities down there. So you use cities like Benton Harbor, like Flint, poor areas of Detroit, where you do your incinerators, where you do your environmental injustice. At Henry Ford Hospital off of Grand Boulevard, they were using incinerators, and then they found out in that circle area, several miles circle area around the hospital, that there was a sudden jump in asthma cases. And what Dr. Moncrief alluded to and what Dr. Davis alluded to is that when it affects European-American communities, then action is taken. What we found, Dr. Jewel Crawford's not here, but what they found in efforts when they looked at the CDC was that totally black communities were chosen to move plants there, to move hog farms there. So wherever there was a black community, that's where you would move and you wouldn't have to worry about toxins and what have you. So this has always been a tradition that if we go back to at least 1710, you're going to find that behavior. Remember, it was only during Bill Clinton time that they actually apologized and tried to fully stop the, you know, Tuskegee experiment. You know, people forget about the HIV experiment where they used Africans in Florida, sent them to, I mean, Haitians in Florida sent them to Africa to infect the Africans, and it wiped out a whole lot of elders in generations. We forget that they've done environmental and they've done the experiments with the chemtrails in around urban cities where you have a high concentration of blacks and minorities. So this is kind of ongoing. Now what people need to be paying attention to is the lies of Fauci are catching up, and that this experiment, they would have liked initially did it on Africans in Africa, but they wind up doing it more on the European population here and the Hispanics. And African Americans have been intelligent and not participating in this current experiment that's going on. And it's not about trying to immunize everybody to protect them, because that's a lie, because you have six inactivated vaccines that are like regular flu vaccines that could protect you that they're holding off the market. So it's a whole agenda. So it's a satanic agenda. But Reverend Pinckney has went up against Satan firsthand. Reverend Pinckney actually went to prison because he quoted the Bible and refused to retract his Deuteronomy statement from the Bible. He stood on the word of God. Then they came after him again for a second time, trying to say that he did voter tampering. And the statement in the newspaper said that they were sending him to prison, not based on the evidence, because there was none, but based on the opinion of the jury, who just happened to be all white. But since that time, God has uplifted him, gave him the largest church in the city of Benton Harbor, and put him at the head of protecting the children and the babies and the people by exposing this lead and providing them with water, providing them with filters, and with education. So your experience, Reverend Pinckney, with this these behaviors and targeting African-American and minority communities.
Dr. Tynes, what's the difference in Benton Harbor and what's called your twin city, St. Joseph, water, makeup?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. What happens, you have 80% black city, which is called Benton Harbor, and then you have an 80% white city that's called St. Joseph, and they're a mile apart. I repeat that.
They're 1 mile apart?
They're 1 mile apart, where you can walk 1 mile and go from a black city to a white city.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to see in the white city that they don't have the problems that the black city has. But remember, the blacks have been trained to self-inflict and to self-injure, to self-hate each other, to have they've been trained to have low self-esteem. You know, blacks have been injured to the point where they don't even want to identify with blacks. And the pitiful thing about it is blacks are kind of anti-Christ, because when Christ came, he only came to the Hebrew at that time, who was at that time was black. So he was talking to black people about loving, to love that brother. He was saying, love that black brother as you love thyself. He was saying, if you have something, if you have aught with your brother, if you have a problem with your brother, then, you know, take them to the other brothers and try to work it out. You know, if your brother, you know, hit you or turn the other cheek, which is also turn the deaf ear. He was talking about the Hebrews did not integrate or interact with the Europeans of that day, and he was specifically sent for the lost children of Israel, who biblically at that time were black people. And so if you were going to follow Christ, Christ came and told black people to love black people, to try to treat black people like, you know, like they were brothers, like you love yourself. And it says, how could you love God who you've not seen and you know, hate your brother? So God was trying to teach us to love one another, but we have such an injured job that we are the least people to trust and love and support and to help one another. And so in these communities that you'll find in Flint, it was the black people who injured the black people of Flint. And in Benton Harbor, you see again the black people injuring the black people in Benton Harbor.
So that scripture, you know, love thy brother or thy neighbor as you love yourself, so that really doesn't pertain to what we've been taught, is that we still supposed to love this white man against us.
Right. Remember, Christ only came for the black man or the black at that time, the Hebrew. Paul was sent out. Paul was mixed of black and white. So Paul was the mulatto or mixed. His job was to bring the European, called the Gentile, into the kingdom. Mm-hmm. So that's when that message went out, when Paul went out. But when Christ came, he was specifically talking to blacks, but he called out twice where white people were doing better than black people. When the centurion came to him, gave him the respect and said, my servant is sick, and I know if you just speak the word that he would be healed, because I'm a man of authority and respect the authority. And he said that he couldn't find any great faith like this in all of Israel. This white man came to this black man for a miracle for his servant. Then you have this Sapphic woman, or the Greek woman, who comes and says, Lord, Lord, my daughter is sick, you know, I need your help. And she says it's not right to give the bread to the dogs, you know. And she says, yes, Lord, but even the dogs eat from the crumbs of the bread table. So this white woman came to this black man asking for help. See, that's when you say historically correct. But our minds, you know, have rejected that. So we don't love each other. So we don't protect one another. So we don't try to nourish in that community, because back then the communities were segregated. The blacks were segregated in terms of Hebrew community. That's an African word. Herabru is where you get Hebrew. It means from across the water. That's a Middle Nature word, or an Egyptian word, or North African word. So what you see is that these are behaviors that have been beat down and trained in us over the 300 to 400 years that we've sojourned here, and that's why we don't have the passion or the fight that you see on the economic level. Last point I'll make is this. Remember Maturus Manumission. Maturus Manumission was set in place so that any black that was pro-white would be placed in a position of over other blacks. In other words, if you became a pastor, you would be placed over other blacks to make sure that you kept them loving whites. If you became a professor, you were teaching the blacks to love whites to maintain that. If you became an athlete, then you were an athlete to be a role model and show that you want to have your white woman, you want to be able to live like a white. If you became an entertainer, their goal was to have a white woman, or to be able to play in a white club, and, you know, that was a goal that the white was right, and that was a greatness. Those things were put in place and are still reinforced if you look at today. And you see that and you reward your FBI informants like a Jesse Jackson or like a Hal Sharpton, or those are the individuals who publicly said they were. So you reward those individuals, those positions. Nothing, no slight on them, but this is historical fact. So what you have to do is that you have Maturus Manumission awarding people who are negative, like the mayor who dropped a bomb on a black project in Philadelphia that they had purchased, and they call themselves a move. You see, so you have this mentality that's been taught, trained, and ingrained in our people, and we see it now in Benton Harbor and Flint and Detroit.
Thank you. Thank you. Reverend Pinckney, would you speak on really who really should be charged here? Because when I look at, after Dr. Davis speaking, you know, particularly regarding these study results, and, you know, the state, everyone, and I'm certain that the EPA and the CDC and others at the federal level all have this information. They all have results of these studies, but no one is doing anything about it. But it also, and I could be misinterpreting this, but what I read, it sounds like now they're like dumping everything in the lap of the city of Benton Harbor for accountability. Now, I can go along with the fact that when they knew about it, they should have informed the residents, they should have brought it directly to the council and all of the commissioners. And what they didn't know, they should have reached out to the health department that's de facto, or they should have sought professional experts in these areas instead of just sitting there. So who should be sued? We've got a serious problem here with our children from almost birth. Because, I mean, would not, if an adult is affected, you know, with lead poisoning, I mean, could that also pass down, pass to the baby, the child? So, you know, I'm really, really kind of perturbed about, you know, this whole situation, even though I've known about, you know, the lead poisoning, you know, worked with the, I was on the crisis committee with Judge Mathis and that group for the Flint, and still involved. But here, you know, just this is just more enlightenment regarding where, you know, just how serious, and I know it's serious, but my gosh, you've got all of these authorities and nobody's doing anything about it. Reverend Pickney. Are you still there?
So you need to see if he's still there, because he normally is in bed by 10 o'clock.
Okay, what was his last number on his phone?
If he called from his phone line, it would be 0110. 269-0110.
Excuse me, you're putting his number out over across the air?
No, just the last four digits.
Oh, his number is publicized, but right, just the last four digits. And the other, if you don't see him there, so he's called it a night.
Okay, so let's go to let's see who I'd like to hear from. I mean, this legal part is really, really getting to me. And so I guess he would be the best one, I think, to address that. So let's come back to Dr. Moncrief. We're kind of getting down to the hour. So we'll go around to everybody who's still here yet. And, you know, and I'd like for you to speak on each one of these issues. I mean, especially this legal part and these meat scores. That is the other thing that really perturbs me, in that, you know, they already know that the challenges that we have as a people and our children, and then they're doing this standardized testing. That's already imbalanced. That's already not fair to begin with, because of our economic background as a people, you know, and our exposure to, you know, the different types of, you know, educational, you know, levels of our parents who are in the home. So Dr. Moncrief will, and you can take your time, and then we'll go on from Dr. Moncrief to Dr. Davis, Dr. Long, Mr. Harding, Robert Harding, and then Dr. Time.
Okay, so when we look at the toxic effects of lead on the body, as mentioned, it affects your brain's development. It affects your ability to learn. It affects your behavior, and lead affects our. While we can do things to reduce the lead levels, a lot of the effects of the lead are not reversible. Okay, and so if we move forward and we look at standardized examinations, we already know that there's a disparity in the performance of people of color on these standardized exams. That's nothing new. We've known about it, documented, you know, since the 60s, but maybe even before then, okay? And it has nothing to do with intelligence. It has to do with the way that the tests are designed. But you put on top of that somebody who's had chronic lead poisoning, lead intoxication, the performance is even more delayed. So moving forward, you can anticipate that that people who have any forms of developmental delay will have a poor performance on a standardized examination. It doesn't matter what color they are. But one thing that I did want, and I when I asked Dr. Tynes to address the issue of Benton Harbor versus St. Joseph, I wanted the conversation, and it didn't happen, and we probably don't have time for it now, but the conversation being that that both of these cities do have problems with lead, but Benton Harbor, but St. Joseph's problem was addressed almost immediately when it was identified versus Benton Harbor's, even though St. Joseph's problem wasn't nearly as bad as Benton Harbor's were. St. Joseph was given, and this is just my understanding, St. Joseph was given a time frame to replace their infrastructure of less than 5 years from the very beginning, as opposed to Benton Harbor was given the 20-year sentence. Resources were made available to replace St. Joseph's infrastructure almost immediately versus Benton Harbor, where people like, and not people like, but where Reverend Pinckney led the grassroots fight to get those pipes changed, to get filters for the people of Benton Harbor. St. Joseph didn't have to go through that. And so we can see the disparities between what blacks get and what whites get. And it's not a feeling that that white communities get a better response from the state than black communities. It's not a feeling that, as Dr. Tynes says, these two cities are 1 mile apart physically, but in terms of resources, the white community.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I have no idea either. But
okay.
The bottom line is we need to get the lead out. And if we can't, if we have barriers to getting the lead out, those barriers need to be identified and they need to be held accountable. They don't need to be able to slip through. You know, if you are arrested for committing a crime and you're carrying a gun, it's a mandatory 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if we identify a community that has toxic lead levels in it, there should be a mandatory fine for whoever's in charge if they do not address that issue while they're in office. Okay? They don't have to solve the issue, but they have to document that they address the issue. They have to have a plan in place, and then the next person coming in must either follow that plan or adjust that plan, and they be held accountable too. For us to keep electing officials who give us lip service but not physical service is really a disservice for us. We need to hold our elected officials accountable. We need to hold these companies accountable. And the hard part, and maybe Dr. Davis can talk about this, we need to hold the landlords accountable, the homeowners. You know, poor people, people struggling who own a house, you know, that's got lead in it. It's hard for them to get that lead out. We understand that, and we should have a system in place to assist them in getting the lead out, not allowing them to let the lead in. But then we have these absentee landlords who do nothing, who won't even go and get the filter, okay? They should be held accountable. And, again, not just with a fine, but you throw some prison time in there for them, you will get accountability.
Yeah.
So I'll leave it at that.
Okay, well, thank you so very much, and you're absolutely right. We're going to go to Dr. Davis.
Yes. Okay. I'm still here. And so, you know, it's been very interesting conversation. And so what I want to contribute now is want to emphasize to people that it's common for lead poisoning to build up slowly over time. And so especially in children. And so we start talking about low levels in our, you know, lead pipes, and they're leaching into our water and you know, in chip paint that has lead in it, in them playing in soil that, you know, is tainted with lead. See, a lot of people don't realize how prevalent lead was had been in the past in terms of our infrastructure. Like, you know, for those of us a little older, you know, we know about lead gas. They used to have lead in gas. And so once they identified that, see, the lead doesn't break down. And so when you had lead in gas, it would actually, wherever you had a road and cars were going by, then the exhaust that would come out, the lead did not break down. It would get into the soil. So when children would actually go out in the and playing in the dirt and it has lead in it, that little bit of lead would get into their system, and it would build up slowly over time. And then, so even very extremely low levels of lead exposure can actually harm a child's mental development. And so that's what I was saying in terms of some of the powers that be are using our children as lead detectors and saying, well, this community keeps having these lower levels and having attention deficit and having lower IQ and the test scores are lower. And so maybe we should do something in this area, this area. Man, we need to be proactive, just like we would in some of the communities where, see, this would not be tolerated in certain communities that had different types of children that were being affected. When we look at the percentages and the numbers of our children that are being detrimentally affected and their dreams are being dashed, and they're saying, okay, just, you know, do something with your hands because you can't think and you're not smart enough to actually, you know, compete. And it's like if the children in Farmington Hills and in the St. Joseph's in the, you know, Birmingham's, if those children were faced with some of these same challenges, it would be a national uproar that says, no, we got to get the lead out. There's no level of lead that's acceptable. So if you've identified and we need to make sure we keep the testing up, find out which kids are most susceptible, and actually be proactive about it and get the lead out of our children's homes, out of their out of the pipes, you know. So that's pretty much what I want to kind of leave with us, is that we have to understand that even small amounts, almost what you would think of minuscule amounts, can be very detrimental to a developing a child that's in developing.
Thank you so very much. You're very welcome. This is also so extremely important. Robert Hardy, are you still there? Robert Hardy, for your final thoughts and remarks.
I believe that the problem is bigger than just lead. We have to really start evaluating our communities for environmental injustice situations where people of the communities, more affluent communities, city planners, politicians have decided that this vulnerable community should be taken advantage of, and all the poisons and environmental toxins and stuff will be located there because no one's listening to anything. And no one cares what those people think anyway because they have no real power in the situation. And, you know, it has a lot to do with, you know, voter rates and whatnot. So we have to make our voice heard. We have to look out for ourselves, move forward. It's necessary that we are vigilant about all things environmental. We have to do with our health and well-being. You know, and it was the community in general, things that affect property values. All these things added to making our communities less valuable at the end of the day. And theirs, and we have to stop putting up with it. Just stop.
Thank you so much, Mr. Harding. While you're on, could you just share with our listening audience and our co-panelists your project, you know, with the food and what you're doing that would put us in control of our own food?
Let me preface the whole conversation with a statement that there's a consideration. You know, no one can really claim to be a free people if they do not grow their own food. If we're not growing our food, whoever is growing our food has tremendous control over our social behavior. Not just putting things in the food, but just in terms of having power to do that if they felt that they were justified, warranted, or to get away with it if it was considered benefit in any way. So until we control our own food, we have a problem immediate and urgent to address. Our agriculture system is developed to supplant the current system that we're subjected to, where we get all this low nutrient value food in our communities, access to healthy quality food. All these problems exacerbate existing problems like unemployment, health issues, problems that we've been plagued with for a decade. By the way, we'll go back to, can you trace back to poor nutrition? So in order for us to get both control of our health and also increase commerce in our neighborhoods, we need to be growing our own food and selling our own food to each other and some other communities as well. Then we were brought to this country to be agriculture for the general populace, for everyone. We've been growing food for a very long time until recent generations. We grew food for everyone, including our own communities. And as some of us old enough to remember, our grandma always had a garden. And a lot of times, grandma would feed more than just their family out of that garden. So we can help our communities in many ways by growing our own food. And my thought, if we take this further, my project involves creating a network of urban farms where we are growing in our big populous areas for a number of reasons. We can create jobs. We can create a better access to better quality food like this. We can also create commerce in our communities where we can make money off of going and selling food to ourselves and surrounding communities. There's a big void in healthy food for not just us, but for a lot of people in this society. A lot of the large agricultural institutions are located overseas where it's cheap to hire labor. The regulatory institutions that exist in those countries are lacking in rigor and structure. And the food that they can grow over there is cheaper to grow, and they're not being watched over so closely there as they would be here. And it's a great opportunity for us to reduce our unemployment and to improve the quality of our health in general. So the program involves a network of urban farms. The technology now is at a point where growing vertically and repurpose places in our communities, warehouses, abandoned buildings, empty lots, wherever we have space, to be done efficiently enough and in enough volume to tremendously impact our access to quality, healthy food and create opportunities for us as well in commerce. Businesses can spring up from this. And my program involves creating these farms, connecting them all up with the farmer education programs that train farmers to do urban vertical growing. We're growing large amounts of food in our own communities, creating a distribution network as well where not only training for farmers and technical support for farmers goes on, but also distribution and value-added processing at these hubs that we call them agri-hubs. Agri-hubs are like the whole network of urban farms where we're able to have all the food that's grown in and around the community by us funnel into these facilities and be distributed from there, checked there for good quality and health benefit, make sure that people are growing them in a responsible fashion, make sure that the jobs that are created go to us, make sure the commerce that's created goes to Black entrepreneurs who are in charge of and owners of these network farms. But the hubs themselves will be like the training center, community engagement center, education center about food and food issues, distribution centers and basically opportunities for us to make sure that we are successful in all these endeavors by monitoring these farms electronically, making sure that everything's going well on the farm in terms of the business itself and being able to provide some of this a healthy quality product to the local community. The whole system was called AgriWeb because it's a web of agricultural institutions, the hubs themselves, and the local surrounding farms as well. It's a way for us to eliminate food deserts permanently in our communities and reinvigorate our community's economy and revitalize the community's health in one fell swoop. And the need is already there. So you say find the need and feel like this is the need that we can fill ourselves in the process of benefiting our community in dozens and dozens of different important ways.
Okay, your technology won Bloomberg C40 City Award. Can you just kind of briefly explain what that means, which led to your being considered or looked upon by foundations such as Microsoft and Rockefeller and others for even up to, you know, over $200 million up to $500 million in order to roll this here out throughout, you know, country. So what is this Bloomberg C40 City Award that, and I know there are many others who are competing for this, but your technology, well, you know, did win this award. And that was just recent, a year or so ago.
That's correct. Actually, we won in the end of 2019, but we entered in 2017. It's an international competition hosted by mayors in major metropolitan cities globally, often Buenos Aires, Los Angeles, Houston, et cetera, et cetera. These mayors put up properties that are currently being underutilized for different reasons. A lot of them were brownfields where there was some unsavory activity going on before. Some of them were just undeveloped for whatever reason, but they're not contributing to the local community, and they're in places where real estate is at a premium. And for our part, we entered the contest because it was a contest to see if we could find a safe way to do something with these properties that was going to be a benefit to the community at the end of the day. So the contest is for teams and or companies who are doing forces to create a team. It could be one or more companies that can propose some repurposing for this property to create a community benefit for everyone in the surrounding community. In Houston, there was a landfill that had been untreated for 40 years plus, and was just thought to be unusable land for that reason in the city. We partnered with a solar farm to propose a repurposing of this property. Now, it sounds odd to try and grow food on a place like that, but we use a technology called aquaponics where we actually don't grow in the ground. We grow above ground. And our facilities we proposed in this particular competition, we actually were going on the second story above ground to make extra sure that there was no chance whatsoever for any kind of tainting or contamination from what goes on underground. The competition was, I think, was 70 teams of companies that competed for this, like to develop this land. And our team won because we had a really evolutionary kind of disruptive proposal to grow food in places where people would think that they could grow food in safe and sane ways. But because we do not in-ground farming but above-ground farming, we don't use any contaminated raw materials from the earth itself. We grow basically in water, and we control access to and supply of, and we grow off the ground. In the situation, it's well, more for me with hydroponics, the only difference is you're adding fish to the equation. The fish create the nutrients that actually feed the plants, as opposed to using synthetic fertilizers like many hydroponic operations will do. So our system is all an organic and natural way to feed people, and it's a really safe and clean way to produce highly nutrient-dense food. Doing this in communities like ours in Sunnyside, Houston, Texas, would be a great opportunity for us to turn this environmental injustice on its head, where we have these tracts of land where people have basically decided to use our communities as dumping grounds or whatever, and then turn around and just abandon it, or warehouses or they've been abandoned or not being kept up by landlords. All these are really opportunities for us to take that land and apply our technology where we can actually do a lot of good for our community. It creates opportunities for entrepreneurs, for education around food, training for farmers, commerce around selling food, commerce around processing and distributing food, and opportunity for us to heal a lot of gaping wounds having to do with environmental injustice and food inequality in our communities. And while we're in that context, recognize globally as having disruptive technology in the industry of agriculture that could change the urban landscape for good and in a permanent, lasting way.
And this is globally, and And then there's no other. This isn't happening anywhere, and also there this results in a zero carbon print as well. So
it's actually a negative carbon footprint. One of the main criteria for the competition is to be able to move carbon from the atmosphere in whatever it is you propose to do. And our technology involves taking copious amounts of carbon from the air, because what we feed our plants and our fish and everything on our farms is captured from the atmosphere as a pollution, the carbon in the air, and a couple of plants that we grow in water that never touches the ground, called duckweed and certain types of algae that we can turn into plant food and feed our animals and dispose of our organic waste by having it digested and create more fertilizers. But so we create all of our feedstocks for the farm was basically from air pollution and plants. Like taking the air pollution into and capturing in the plants and using the plants as a resource of revenue for different things we can make on our farms. All this technology is never been put together in this fashion before, and by combining it in this way and applying it to this problem, we solve several of social problems and economic issues for our communities at the same time, helping the broader community by using land that's basically just been abandoned and written off.
Thank you so much, so very much. We're going to go to Dr. Tynes. And, you know, food is important. I've heard several times tonight when lead poisoning, it takes a long while for treatment. Of course, I'm not medical or science, but to get out of the system, to work it out of the system. But, I wanted him to explain this food, about the food, because I know that what we intake into our bodies, be it supplements or through our food, that certainly helps us, our health, and would I think would help change, or aid this in the, getting rid of poisoning. Dr. Tynes, can you speak on that and kind of give your summary? And again, I want to thank Mr. Hardy for this valuable information. Dr. Tynes.
Yes. One question I had is that it sounds like that will work in warm environments, but Michigan, we have winters, and I wonder what would happen in the winter environment.
Let's ask him right now. Let's ask him right now.
Well, this agriculture system is designed to be used indoors. So you avoid all the impacts of global warming by going indoors.
Lead made my CP not work. Lead made me cum blood.
Hello?
Go ahead. That was Go ahead. That was a cross thing, cross wire. Go ahead.
At the this is vertical indoor agriculture. So if you're not favored as a hot sun in the summertime or in freezing cold conditions in the wintertime, you're in an indoor controlled agriculture environment. It's, you know, you go to your farm in a polo shirt with a clipboard and a smartphone. This is modern agriculture in every regard, and it's done indoors to help avoid the terrible impacts of climate change on farmers. So basically, it's the farming of the future, because it's not subject to being affected so much by the weather and the environment is in chaos right now.
And so it's year-round. Okay.
What he says is that it's environmentally controlled, so you have to make sure it's the appropriate temperature and heat. So you got to make sure your heating is in place and probably some electrical lighting in place. Okay.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. So what is important is, yes, food will help. The thing is that you have to make it be competition. You have to, I guess, one that comes to my mind is you have a whole lot of marbles. And what happens is that, but before you put your marbles down, you have brown marbles and you have this guy who has yellow marbles. And so you put your yellow marbles down and that's kind of running things, and that's your lead. And what you have to do is you have to get those marbles into the circle or get them into a hole. Now, if you have just lead and you add your brown marbles in, then you're going to have more of a chance to hit those brown marbles and get them into the holes you need them to get to, and making it harder for the yellow marbles to get into the holes. In other words, you have to have competition, a competitive inhibitor. And so once you get lead poison, you need to try to get as much iron in your body as possible to try to get the lead out. And that's what we're talking about today. Now, lead will stay in a red blood cell going on almost to 120 days. And then it could be recycled, or it can be kind of passed out the bowels. Through the GI tract, through your intestines, through your big intestines, throughout your rectum, you know, move it out in the explanation. So you have to do things to have high vitamin C, citric acid, to help loosen the metal up in your diet. And then you know, back in the old days, our grandparents used to eat what was called poke salad. Sometimes with greens and sometimes with eggs. Now, that's left over from Africa, and that pork salad was high in iron. So you got to get greens that are high in iron. And so your aquaponic or that type of garden, growing these Swiss chard and kale, and would definitely help to put iron, to cut down on anemia, and to help block lead absorption. So the vitamin C, vitamin C with the high greens or the high iron, or the multivitamin or the prenatal vitamins in women, to be competitive inhibitor, to have enough iron to overload the amount of iron in the body, so that it will fill up the space and keep the lead from getting back into the body. And the lead will leave the body within the red blood cells in 120 days, but it will leave out of the blood normally between 25 and 30 days. So when you catch somebody has blood lead levels and they are an adult and it should be soaked up by the big size of the body, that's saying that you got some active exposure going on and you may have some high-level exposure, because you shouldn't see nothing in the adult. The children or the babies with the smaller body size, then it's going to be more concentrated, and you should be able to pick that up easier, but you shouldn't pick it up in the adult. Now, there is a measurement tool, it's called XRY, where you can actually measure heavy metals in the shin bone or tibia bones, and that's how you could tell the adult's been affected from that era when there was lead gas, when there was lead in the gas, or they may be having a current high level. So even though you don't see it in the red, in the serum, in the whole blood or the plasma, whatever you want to call it, you can still find it in the bones with this special instrument. And that's what we're going to be trying to do. Right now we're doing everybody's blood, the whole blood, which is the most accurate. When you do a finger strip, you got to follow that up with a blood test if it's positive. But we're also screening everybody and just checking. We're going to be checking the bone to see how much lead is in there. So, again, summary, you do the high plant-based diet that of plants that are high in iron. You do the multivitamins. You with the high level of vitamin C, the emergency C, whatever, 3,000 milligrams a day, you know, helps to keep the iron away, along with the prenatal or the complete multivitamin with iron. That's really what we can do. The other main thing is that you try to avoid any further exposure or contact with lead. So that's what you can do. We only at 20, at levels of 20, do we consider try to do the special IV chelation type thing or 40. The thing that you need to know is that businessmen, I call them bastards because, you know, they see what they did in terms of the whole vaccine stuff and the treatment. But the OSHA requirement says that you can go up to 40, a level of 40, and work in a plant that produces lead or lead casting or lead plating. They allow you to go up to 40. And if you go up to 50, then they have to take you off of work until they can get your lead levels back down to 40. And we know that, you know, even a level of 1 does some damage. Level of 5 is kind of critical, and that's when we go after in pediatrics trying to make a difference. But here it is, currently right now in 2021, in November 2nd, going on the 3rd, that if you work in a plant that has lead, they will allow the lead of 40, as long as you're not dead, that you can keep working to make that factory product, whatever it is, and that they're only going to intervene when you go to 50, because we know that at 50 you have an increased chance of sudden death. So that's the OSHA guidelines. There's some stupid guidelines.
Wow. Thank you so much, Dr. Tynes. Okay, thank you very much. So we're going to ask Dr. Long and to come with your final thoughts, and then we're going to have Dr. Tatum to wrap us up here tonight. Dr. Long, if I hope I haven't missed anyone. If I have, just speak up after Dr. Long.
Again, I want to thank Dr. Mary Lee and Dr. Tatum for the invite tonight. You know, again, my point is that lead is a toxin. It's a poison to the brain, and the manifestations are pretty extensive throughout a lifespan. You know, most of us really get perturbed and very frustrated when we see these levels in the various cities that we've spoken about of tonight, including Detroit, Flint, Benton Harbor. Yet, I don't think the general public understands when we say it's a poison, and they don't quite understand, you know, some of the things that Dr. Tynes had mentioned about chelation therapy, et cetera. But lead does affect brain development. It affects different parts of our brain in terms of being able to executively use our memories and function. So it impedes normal impulse control, et cetera. One thing I wanted to mention, and perhaps we can continue to study at a later date, there have been cases associated with law in which lead toxicity has been used as a criminal defense. You know, it's not a lot of attention given to that, but there are some cases that exist. There have been different research studies also associated with lead toxicity determining criminal responsibility. So with that in mind, you know, in terms of lead, as we've all mentioned over and over tonight, the external consequences of lead, i.e., water pipes, et cetera, But then the internal consequences in terms of its impact on our brains has to be considered. So what I plan to do if we have this discussion again is to bring a presentation in terms of the various cases in the United States in which attorneys have brought forth defenses based on individuals being exposed to lead, thus prompting a criminal responsibility defense. So, again, my conclusion is that lead is a toxin. It's a poison to our brains, and despite, you know, some of the conditions that we know about, such as ADHD, there are other cases that are purely associated with the fact that this is a toxin in our brain, and it creates a lot of aggression. It would be interesting if some attorneys in Detroit have ever used that as a defense, or in Benton Harbor or some of the other large cities around the country. And the case I'm referring to actually occurred in the state of Pennsylvania, and it was a long-term study that started back in 1957 all the way to 1965. And the participants, of course, were 86% black females who were pregnant. But like I said, if we revisit this topic, I'd like to present more information on those studies as it relates to criminality and the juvenile justice system, the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. Perhaps that would answer some of the questions that were presented earlier for Dr. Times and Reverend Pinkney.
Okay, that sounds great. I'd love to accommodate that type of conversation. But, you know, bring it in, maybe we can even get some attorneys to join us. I really like that. Thank
okay.
you, Dr. Long, for, you know, your support and, you know, coming on and sharing. I want to, you know, thank all of our guests, our co-hosts who are missing tonight, you know, due to other obligations, Michael Pines and Dr. James Cannon. You all know that how much I love you and I'll miss you when you're not here. But I do know and understand you've got, you know, other work to do too as well, and you're doing great work. So again, to, you know, all of you who've been here tonight and each time, you know, I say thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. And let's see, looks like I just want to be sure we don't leave anyone out here. And so we're going to go to Dr. Tatum to wrap us up, and especially don't want to leave out our listening audiences and let you know that without you, we don't have a show. Just hope I haven't missed anyone.
Yeah, Dr. Mary Lee, remember, next Thursday at 6 o'clock, we're going to be on Zoom discussing lead some more. So next Thursday, 6 o'clock on Zoom.
Okay, and we'll get that information out to our people, too. We'll get the flyer out where you all know, you know, how to tune in on the Zoom. That's, do you have a phone number or anything you want to give out right now, Dr. Times?
Yeah, we could, there's the Zoom number, and, yes, there could be a phone number if that's what you're asking. So are you asking for, because they can Zoom in on their computer, or if they don't have a computer, they could use their phone.
Okay.
I can read that off to you.
Okay, yeah, go ahead and read that off. And anyone, get ready right now and get your pen, your paper, and then you can write this number down because you could be listening, you know, by internet and I don't even know and know that you're there. But go ahead and write this information down now. Go ahead, Dr. Tyne.
Okay, so here we go. So I'm going to start off with the direct link, and you can put this in your on your computer, H like in Harry, T like in Tom, T like in Tom, P like in Paul, S like in Sam, the semicolon, /Zoom, Zoom, .us, /J like in John, /9399825-2551. And I'll repeat that again. If you go to Zoom, all you have to do is put a meeting ID in. The meeting ID is 939-9825-2551. If you want to go by phone, then if you're on the East Coast, you would use 1-646-558-8656. I'll repeat, 1-646-558-8656 if you're on the East Coast. If you're on the West Coast of Chicago, I mean not Chicago, West, like in California, you would use 1-669-900-9128. Again, if you're on the California coast, you can use 1-669-900-9128. If you're all the way over at Texas or Houston or in that area, you can use 1-346-248-7799. Again, if you're in the Texas area, 1-346-248-7799. And again, the meeting ID is still the same, 939-9825-2551. And that's getting the lead out, and we're going to have the doctors that you've had tonight, plus we're also going to have Dr. Susan Buchanan out of the University of Illinois, who actually consults with the CDC. And we're going to have Dr. The right Reverend Pinckney back on, and Dr. Moncrief, Dr. Davis, and Dr. Longs will also be participating. And prayerfully, we'll have Michael Tynes to do a systemic dopes and his sled to set the background up. And that's going to be starting at 6 o'clock next Thursday. Not this coming Thursday, but the 11th next Thursday. Thank you, Dr. Lee.
You're welcome, and thank you as well. Also, if you did get all that information, text your phone number to 5 phone number, and we'll understand that you want to get that information. That number again is 571-251-5193. Now, we do have a light on, and from our listening audience, we've gone over already, but we will open up this line in case you want to say something or have a question. Your line is open.
Yeah, lead made my cock not work anymore. It my penis doesn't work because of lead poisoning. It's truly a sad fate, but it's my life. So.
Yeah, we're sorry for that little fella. Okay, Dr. Lee.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I got it. Okay, well, it's all kind out there who are listening, so it's all right. Tato, you want to take us off?
Yeah, can you hear me, Dr. Lee?
Yes, we can.
All right, outstanding show once again to Dr. Tynes and all the experts on the panel. This is close to home to me. I have two relatives that were residing in Flint, Michigan. One of them is involved in one of the, a lawsuit dealing with lead poisoning. So this is very close home to me. So this information that was disseminated tonight was very needed throughout the nation so that we can be very aware of what's happening and what they're doing in being clandestine type of operations. So going forward, Dr. Lee, continue to bring informative programs like this, keep our community, especially African-American community, aware and informed so we can be proactive in how to keep these things out of our community. God bless you and all the experts tonight.
Thank you so very much. And again, this stay safe and well until next week. This is Dr. Mary Lee Live. God bless you all.
Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Peace to the movement. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind, and it's no promise. And we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they minutes have changed. Kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options. Rob is playing, now we locked up a game. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states. Working your forms, black nannies carry your white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars. But you don't ever show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police say you leave us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? You never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I wanna get paid. And nothing round up on my family and shake.
Still no Bill Laden.